Today's daf in Masechet Beitzah brought to you on this wonderful Yisro Chag, Metzoy, Simchas Torah, Shmini Atzeres, Tavshin Pei Beit, is daf Chof Chet, and we're holding right at the Halakha Mishnah at the top of the daf. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shokel Adam Basar Keneged HaKli or Keneged HaKupitz, it's okay to weigh meat. Now, we were talking yesterday about what you would do to somehow get away with actually doing a business transaction, which does not appear to be business. How could you buy meat on Yontif without buying the meat? And we talked about how you could split it up, and we had to be careful that there shouldn't be anything that mentioned money, that there was an uvdav d'chol. Now the question is, how could you weigh the meat? So Reb Yehuda says, well, as long as you don't use a weight on the scale, you could actually weigh the meat against some type of, maybe, I don't know, a cup or a glass that you have that you know has a certain weight, or maybe just the kufitz, which is the butcher's cleaver, which he knows how much it weighs. And as long as it doesn't look like he's weighing, because he doesn't have anything that has a clear-cut weight on it on the scale, then it does not look like an uvdav d'chol, and it doesn't look like he's conducting business. V'chachomim omrim, ein mashkichin b'kaf mosnaim, kol ikar. You cannot use a scale at all. Pay no attention to the scale. Now, when you say those extra words of kol ikar, I mean, that must be coming to add something. You could have just said, ein mashkichin b'kaf mosnaim. Saying, don't even think about it, baby. What is that coming to tell me? Omrim, you know, Shmuel, this means, even if you have a piece of meat, and you want to put the piece of meat on the scale. Remember that the scale in those days usually hung from the ceiling and mice weren't able to get to it. And so you want to put the meat up there just to protect it from mice. Omre vidi baravin, you can't do that. It's true, but that's only if it's talia b'terita. That's only if the scale is actually hanging from the special ring that holds it in such a way that it's able to register the weight. So then it looks like he's weighing. But if it's just on the scale and it's not connected to the part that actually does the weighing, so then what's the problem? Then you could certainly protect the meat from the mice. Another thing is that tabach uman asur lishkol basar b'yad. If the guy is a really good butcher, he's a professional, so then he's got to be careful about even weighing the meat in his hand. So that's to hold a weight in one hand and meat in the other hand, and you move it back and forth, and you get, after you become an expert in the thing, you get a very good sense of the actual balancing of the weight together with the meat. You can't do that because that would be the way that you would actually do an uvda d'chol, because you can actually do that in the store during the week when you're doing a regular sale. The words tabach uman probably are wrong, because the way that Rashi understands the basar b'mayim is that we're talking about over here that there were specific markings inside of the container in which the amount of displacement of the water that was in the container was clearly marked against the norm of taking into consideration the normal density of meat that would have displaced that amount of water. And so basically it's just another way to weigh it, in which case you don't have to be a professional to do this. Anybody can read the weight off of the numbers that are inside of the container. So because of that, some take out the words tabach uman. The Amar of Chiyah Barashi, Asur la'asot beit yad bebasar. Something else, normally when a guy would buy a piece of meat, they didn't exactly have plastic bags in those days, but what they did do is they made a handle in the meat itself by cutting a little handle into it, and then you could hold the meat and just carry it home. And that would, however, be very, very much a sign of doing business. Somebody walks home like that is basically, you know, he just bought the piece of meat. So you can't do that. Ravina, but I mean, you can certainly stick your finger through it to make a hole. It's only the professional-looking packaged meat, so to speak, that has a cut kind of perfect handle for carrying. Omravuna, mutar la'asot siman bebasar, but you are certainly allowed to make a mark that would allow your family to identify the meat, because basically if you would send meat with someone that you'd have to be chorshish, that the goy would maybe switch the meat for another piece of meat, how, when the meat would come home, how would you know that it was the meat that was sent to you? So, I mean, nowadays we use little holograms, or it's wrapped in a particular way with a hechsher on it, whatever. But in those days, what they would do is they would have a code. So, in other words, let's say like Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, when he would send a piece of meat, it was always cut into a triangular shape. And so, mechatichla tlat karnata. That way the family knew. Nobody cuts the meat into triangles. And the family would see, oh, Daddy must have sent this, because he would always do that, so we can know that it's his. That you are allowed to do, because that doesn't necessarily show anything about having engaged in business. Rabbi Chiyam and Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe, who would be buying something together, what they would do is they would, if they want to split it, so they would weigh one piece of meat against the other. And that way, it would seem to me that they would do the uvda dechol, because basically you take a scale, put one piece of meat on one side, put the other piece of meat on the other side, and then you know that you both have the same weight. But problem is, that's exactly what you would do in your normal weekday activity. So why would that not be an uvda dechol, asks the Gemara? This doesn't seem to be going according to anybody. Lo k'Rabbi Yehuda, v'lo k'Rabbanan. I think that I should also turn off my video, just to make sure that we're all on the same page here, since not one single person is showing themselves. So I figure we'll turn this into an audio. Ah, well, look at this. We actually got somebody. Oh, looky, looky. There are people, not just names. Well, now we're talking. Okay. Talking a little bit, you know. We have to get to the point where Zoom allows you to decide who gets to see your video and who just gets to hear the audio. That we should try to work out. Anyway, so who's this going like? It doesn't seem to be going according to anybody, neither Rabbi Yehuda nor the Rabbanan, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, didn't Rabbi Yehuda say that you're allowed to use a scale if you're using not a weight, but you're using a cup, a glass, something that you have, or even the butcher's cleaver that he would usually use, and he knows exactly how much it weighs, so it doesn't look like he's weighing something, because it's certainly not a weight on the scale, but that means only against the claim, but not to weigh one piece of meat against the other piece of meat. You have a kilo and a kilo on either side, or whatever it is. I mean, that you can't do, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, and according to the Rabbanan. I mean, they said even worse, you're not allowed to get anything on the scale, get him to put in a piece of meat on the scale to protect it from mice or whatever. So how did Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon allow you to use the scale to do even, not only forget about according to the Rabbanan, but I mean, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, they actually weighed a known piece of meat that had a kilo of meat on, and they were weighing one against the other. Ah, because there is a shita that actually holds you can do that. Inu the avot k'Rabbi Yehoshua. The Tanya Rabbi Yehoshua Omer, shoklin mona k'neged mona b'yom tov. Rabbi Yehoshua holds it's not considered to be a normal mode of shokel, in order to have one piece being weighed against another piece. So that would be basically not according to either Rabbi Yehuda or the Rabbanan. What's the halacha? Rabbi Yosef, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehoshua. I'll tell you why I'm saying that. Because even though that's keneged both of the shittas in our Mishnah, but hoel utznan b'vachorot, take a look at the Mishnah in Bechorot, and you will see that the Mishnah in Bechorot takes on the shita of Rabbi Yehoshua as if it's like a given. It's not. When it comes to psulei hamugdashim hana'atan lahegdash, so this, in order to understand this, we have to consider why it is that the Torah said you're not allowed to sell the bechor, you're not allowed to sell your meiser behema, and because of that, we define that as meaning you're not allowed to even do something that would be the normal pu'ulot of selling. So you can't even weigh it, and hang it up in a butcher store, and so on. And yet, when it comes to psulei hamukdashim, which are also hegdash, we do allow you to do that. Now, why is that? Because the difference is that the market value of meat on psulei hamukdashim, it's important for us to maintain the market value. Because whatever the market value is, that's what people are going to pay to hegdash when it comes to being poda that meat. So therefore, you're right. It is something of a bizoyen for us to be weighing it on the scale. But if we refuse to allow people to weigh it on the scale, they can only buy it by estimation. So then people are not going to pay the same amount because they don't want to be cheated. They don't know whether they're getting really their money's worth. So because of that, in order to make sure that Hegdish makes the maximum amount of money that they can, we allow you to go ahead and to weigh it. However, when it comes to a Bechor, or when it comes to Meiser Behema, Hegdish doesn't make a single solitary cent off of that because the Bechor belongs to the Kohen and the Meiser Behema belongs to the Yisrael who owns it. And therefore, to be Mekel, in order to allow them to make more money and therefore to do things that are basically a bizoyen to some extent for Hegdish, to treat the meat like it's just regular meat in a butcher shop, that we won't do, just to get somebody money if Hegdish doesn't make any money off of it. So fine. So this explains the Mishnah. So psuli hamukdashim where hanatan by Hegdish, over there you can weigh it. But when it comes to a bechor, you can't. However, now look at this. The Mishnah says you can weigh one piece of meat as against another piece of meat when it comes to a bechor. Why? Obviously because putting one piece of meat on one side of a scale and one piece of meat on the other side of the scale is not considered to be the normal way that you would weigh. And therefore, it's not considered to be a bizoyen for Hegdash. So if that's the case, if it's not the normal way, then it should be mutar on Yom Tov also. Therefore, Tanya's Reb Yosef, that this Mishnah is essentially telling us that this shita of Rabbi Yoshua, who said that you can weigh things in this way on Yom Tov, is apparently acceptable, because it's a Stam Mishnah over here in Bechoris that accepts it. Says the Gemara, I mean, Abaya, how do you know? There may certainly be other issues involved. V'dilma logi. It may be that Rabbi Yoshua would not have agreed to this Mishnah about the weighing of Bechor, and it may be that that Mishnah would not have agreed to Rabbi Yoshua binogea the dinim of Yantiv, because there's other issues that are involved. I mean, akan lo kom Rabbi Yoshua hocha, elo deleka bizyon kodashim. Why did Rabbi Yoshua say you can weigh it this way in Yantiv? Because he doesn't have, it's true. Of course he's saying it's not the norm to weigh this way, right? But just because it's not the norm to weigh that way doesn't mean that he would allow you to do that even in the case of a bechor, because it may not be the norm, but it's still not nice. Why are you treating kachim as if it's just something that we need to know how it is how much it is, but we're going to do it in a different way? It's still a bizoyen. Still treating it like commercial stuff. So maybe he wouldn't have agreed with that case. And you could say also that the chachomim who are whoever that Stam Mishnah is going like, maybe it's not like Rabbi Yeshua, and the chachomim would never have agreed to this. They would have said, look, in that case, what is the issue? The issue is whether it's mirsek uvdan dechol. Is this the normal way that you would sell meat? No. People don't sell meat by weighing one piece of meat against another meat. They can split meat. Okay, I understand. That's the normal way that you would split it with a friend, but it's not the normal way to go into the supermarket and have them weigh one piece against another piece. You want to weigh directly on the scale with a weight, right? So therefore, here where Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe, they were not selling, they were splitting the meat. But then maybe the Chachamim would say, hold on a second, we never allowed you to do an Uvda Dechol. So when it came to the idea of the sale of a Bechor, there it's not a sale. But over here, where we're talking about Chalukah, it is Uvda Dechol. So therefore, you have no way of knowing whether Rabbi Yoshua would have agreed to the Mishnah in Bechoris, and whether whoever the Tan is of the Mishnah in Bechoris would have agreed here to Rabbi Yoshua. So by the time we do not have a riot. Okay, but by the way, I don't understand. Are you telling me that Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe would actually weigh one piece of meat against another piece of meat to make sure that both of them were getting, I mean, like, you know, I understand if they were siblings, you know, maybe I am. But I mean, these were people who loved each other. They couldn't have cared less. Take the bigger piece. You think I care? I mean, are you trying to tell me that Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe were makbid one on the other? You know, we happen to know of a story where somebody brought to Rebbe's home these seven beautiful fish, right? So this was like, the fisherman brings this beautiful gift to Rebbe's home. And it turned out, we find five out of the seven fish in Rabbi Chia's house. And Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe, who was like, I mean, he should have said, hey, wait a minute, I live here, you know, I'm Rebbe's son. I mean, don't you think that maybe at least we could have given me, you know, four, and you take three? Instead, you leave me two, and the Talmud gets five, and the son gets nothing. I mean, what am I, chopped liver? So you see that, of course he didn't care. Otherwise, he never would have done it that way. So something's wrong with the story. Rav Papa, yeah, there's definitely something wrong with the story. There's no way that it could involve Rabbi Chiya and Rav Shimon Bar Rebbe. So it's got to be that there were people that did split. Rav Chiya used to split meat with Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi. I mean, Rav Shimon Bar Rebbe used to split meat with Bar Kappara, but I mean, they were not that close that they wouldn't be makbid on each other. So then the story makes sense. So one or the other of these guys is a mistaken identity. It was either Rav Chiya together with Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi, which was very often that they would buy things together, or it was Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe and Bar Kappara who also would buy things together. However, they were not that close that they wouldn't be makbid if one guy takes more. And now it's time for Sir Richard, who managed to disappear. How do you like that? He shows his face at the beginning for a minute, and then he goes and disappears. And it's still Yontev in Joburg. And Doc isn't here. This is a disaster. It looks like I'm going to have to do the honors. Zark der Heleke Mishnah. Ein mashchizin et asakin biyom tov. Further to our discussion of doing business in the butcher shop, I mean, what if you got to sharpen a knife? Are you allowed to sharpen a knife? So I understand that I need to do this in order to ultimately have Ochel Nefesh, but I mean, this isn't for Ochel Nefesh directly. It's sort of, you know, indirect. If I have a knife, so it's going to be easier for me to cut the meat and buy the meat and so on and so forth. Is that mutter? So here it says it's not. Now we're going to actually see that it's a big machlokas. And this is going to introduce to us this sugya of Makshire Ochel Nefesh, which Tosfos already used before, and he brought it up to show that Rashi's distinction of work that can be done before Yontif, that is direct Malachas Ochel Nefesh, Rashi claims is not supposed to be done on Yontif. Tosfos brings a raya from this Mishnah we're about to enter that cannot be the case, and we'll see. So the problem over here is that this is Makshire Ochel Nefesh. So apparently that's Osir, at least according to whoever the Tana is of this Mishnah. Aval, Mesi'a gabe chaverta. You can sort of rub it against another knife, which can help to make it sharper, but it's certainly not the normal way you would. So in doing it in this way, it's not the normal uvda dechol. Omrevuna, when it says that you cannot sharpen a knife, it means you cannot use a stone, the whetstone. But you can use, let's say, a wooden board or a leather board, you know, something like that, that you could use, because that's not considered to be the normal way to do it. Well, I'm reviewed on Shmuel. I just want you to know something else. When Rav Huna says over here that you cannot use a stone to sharpen the knife, he means literally only for purposes of sharpening the knife. If you want to use a whetstone in order to get the knife clean, and that is a very good way to get a knife clean, because it removes like the whole outer layer. So if that's what you're doing, if you have like an oily deposit on the knife, you'd be allowed even to use a whetstone. Which implies that Bishal 8, that when Rav Huna said you can use a wooden sharpener, he meant literally to sharpen. Because you can the stone you can use to take off the shamnunis. So then the wood, you could do more than that. You can do better than that, because that's what he's coming to tell me. He's coming to qualify that even the whetstone that you're not supposed to use, you could use in order to remove oil. Now, some learn that actually that's not what Rav Yehuda said. Rav Yehuda said about the second part of Rav Huna's statement, namely, that Ikud Amatin La Seifa, that Rav Huna had said that Bishal Eitz, it's mutter. And in this version, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, when Rav Huna said, Bishal Eitz, it's mutter, he didn't mean it's mutter to sharpen. He meant it's mutter to use Eitz to take off the grease on the knife. Aval Chadada, it would be usher to sharpen it even if you're using wood. And in this version, the implication is that when it comes to using an actual whetstone, you cannot even do the removal of an oily deposit. The pashtus is that removing an oily deposit is no different than washing the knife in the sink. But you see, from here, because of its similarity to the way that you sharpen, in this version it would have been Osir. So, but in both of these versions, Rav Yehuda was talking about what Rav Huna had said about his understanding the Mishnah. Now, it turns out that there's a different way of understanding the entire story, and that actually Rav Yehuda was never talking about Rav Huna. Rav Yehuda was talking about the Mishnah directly, without discussing these differences between wood and stone and so on. Ikin amat ila matniti. Now, there's one that Rav Yehuda was speaking about the Mishnah directly. Ein mashchizin et asakin biyom tov. To which, in this version, it was Rav Yehuda who said directly on that, Om Rav Yehuda Mishmuel, it's true that you cannot sharpen a knife, but it's only literally sharpening that saucer. But you certainly are allowed to scrape off the oily deposits on a knife. It's greasy. So lahavir sham nunita is mutter no matter how you do it, even if you would doing it in a way that is similar to sharpening. And this, again, also has two versions. So again, in this first version, if he's talking about directly on the Mishnah, so we made the implication that michlal dalgabe chaverta filu lechadada nami mutar, which would be mashma, that when the Mishnah says at the end that you can rub one knife on another knife, that would be even literally to sharpen it, because after all, Shmuel was being quoted by Rav Yehuda as saying that you'd be allowed to clean it even on the first part of the Mishnah, not dalgabe chaverta, right? However, here too, there's another version. That you are allowed to scrape one knife against another knife, and it was there that Rav Yehuda quoted Shmuel as saying, Om Rav Yehuda Mishmuel, what can you do that to do? Only to clean it. Lahavir sham nunita, to get rid of the oil deposits. Even on one knife against the other, you are not allowed to do any type of sharpening of a knife, even if you make a shinoi by rubbing one knife on the other. Michlal, Tibamashchez says, if you would be using the actual sharpener, you wouldn't even be allowed to remove the grease. Because, I mean, he's only being mati removing the grease on by rubbing one knife against the other. So here, too, we have both different lashinas, except that they're not on Rav Huna, they're on the Mishnah. Now, who is the Tana that says that it's usur to sharpen your knife on Yontev, even though you obviously need that knife for food? But I thought ochel nefesh is mutter. Ah, says Rav Chisda, you see? This Tana is clearly not going like Rav Yehuda. This is the machlokes that we had in the Braita. Ein ben yom tov l'shabbat, ela ochel nefesh bilvad. Rabbi Yehuda matir, af machshirei ochel nefesh. So that's a Mishnah, but in the Braita it adds that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could even do things that are only necessary ultimately to prepare for ochel nefesh. Well, obviously sharpening the knife is a preparation for ochel nefesh, right? So our Tana apparently does not hold of Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei Rav Chisda, I detect a certain bias in your tone. Well, this Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, in other words, is it okay if I just quote you as saying, Darshina Mishim Chalochek Rabbi Yehuda? This is how Rashi understands it. Not they say over, but rather, shall we therefore publicize the fact that you are apparently partial to the Psak Alibid Rabbi Yehuda? Oi, said Rav Chisda, halavai, that those types of assumptions should always be made about me. All these kinds of Piskei Halachos that are absolutely true. You're welcome to say them in my name anytime you want. I didn't say anything, but that's definitely my feelings about this. You know, I once had a maisa where I was standing in front of Rava, and there was Rava rubbing a knife up against the edge of a basket top, the rim. So I asked him, Rebbe, are you doing this to sharpen the knife, or is it just like dirty and you're trying to remove the shamnunis? So he said to me, no, I'm only cleaning it off. But I saw that that was not true. I saw very clearly he was definitely sharpening it. So I saw from here that kasava, and we discussed this earlier, the first time that we brought out the Inyan HaMakshir Yochel Nefesh, remember when he kept refusing to give a straight answer by saying, well, you could always use another one, well, you could, and we said over there, the reason was, as we're going to see, and here's where we see it, is that it's halakha ve'ein morin kein. So he didn't want to be caught out actually saying b'feirush you're allowed to do makshirei oichol nefesh because of the problem that indeed makshirei oichol nefesh are only mutter in the event that they weren't really able to be done for some reason, either because you didn't notice or because you were like extremely busy. But whatever the case is, and it wasn't going to be done erev yontev, and therefore it's mutter. But if we would just tell people, makshirei oichol nefesh is okay, then they would go all out and they would just treat it the same way that they treat literal oichol nefesh. Now, this is very clearly, says Tosfos, that when it comes to actual oichol nefesh, there is no such problem. It's only makshirei oichol nefesh that we have this problem about. Okay. So I saw that he just didn't want to make it public, but he was doing this for purposes of sharpening. Because he held that even though the halacha, it's true, goes like Rabbi Yehuda, but in Morin Kain, we don't give a public psak because of the way that it could be misused. The Omer Abai said, I had a story where I was standing in front of Rabba, and he was doing the same thing. He was rubbing a knife on the edge of a millstone. And I said to him, is Rabbi trying to sharpen that knife or just clean it? He said, well, I'm just cleaning it off, you know, taking off a little bit of the oil here. But I saw very clearly that he was sharpening it. Then it must be that he held that he didn't want to openly say that. Anyway, another question that has to do with a knife. Because besides sharpening a knife, remember that we made a takana that a sheichet should show his knife to the Rav of the city, to Meret Tzedek, and that was in order to be Mechabed, the Bezdin, or the Rav, so that all of the Inyonim of the town would be underneath him. Could you do that on Yontev? So, because of that, I mean, it's, you know, to check, to make sure it's very smooth, it's a big expertise. Obviously, we trust the Sheikhet, but the fact is that we made his takana, so now it looks, if he goes, because that's like very normal at the beginning of the day, there is like a line of shechtim at the Rav's house, and they're all because everybody's got a lot of work to do during the day to shecht a bunch of animals. Now that is definitely looks like an uvda duchol. So is it allowed? So can you do that? Says Rav Mari Bereder Rav Bizna, he said it's mutter, and the Rav Bonnet said it's aser. So Rav Yosef said, look, a Talmud Chacham anyway is allowed to be roya la'atzmo. He's allowed to look, he doesn't have to present to somebody else. And then, once he's allowed to do it for himself, so it doesn't look, there's no who's going to know, and then he can lend that knife to other sheikhim to use. The Omer of Rav Yosef, suppose a knife became dulled on Yontif. So now, that's obviously a slow process, right? I mean, you can't say suddenly it became dulled. So the question is, I mean, you certainly could have made it sharper before Yontif. But there's always a point in everyone's life where now I can't take this knife anymore and it needs to be sharpened. I mean, you could have said that last week too when you were struggling with it, right? But there's that tipping point. So now we're talking about a new idea. The idea over here is a tipping point that's reached on Yontif. So what's the halach over there? Obviously, if it was literally broken, it had some kind of a nick in the knife itself. Of course not. You should have done erev Yontif. And you wouldn't be allowed to do it today because of Makshirei Oichol Nefesh. But where there was a tipping point, and you reached the tipping point on Yontif, so then you are allowed to sharpen it on Yontif, but this is only where it still can cut, theoretically. It's just that you've got to really be pushing hard on it. But if it had already reached that stage before Yontif, and now it won't cut at all, then it's considered to be either because of tircha yetira, to get it back sharp, but that's going to take a lot of sharpening, or because obviously the real tipping point was reached before Yontav, you should have taken care of it before. Rashi says because of tircha yetira. Okay, now, getting back to the machlokes between Reb Yudin and Rabbanan about makshirei oichol nefesh, are they mutter or asron Yontav? Dorash, Rav Chista, Vitema, Rav Yosef. אחד סכין שנפגמה, ואחד שפוד שנרצם, ואחד גריפת תנור וחיריים ביום טוב, באנו למחלוקת רבי יהודה ורבנו. Look, there's all kinds of ways that this kind of thing can happen. You can have a knife that got a nick in it, right? Or you can have, not that was dull, but that got an actual nick on yontif. Or you could have a case of a spit, and the whole sharp part of the spit broke off, so now it's useless. You can't stick it in to the other side. And, or what about in a case, this is a little bit of machlokas, exactly what the case is, according to Tosis, we're talking about, you bought a new oven, and it's filled with junk inside of it, it's got a lot of stones and cement that have fallen off into the oven, you want to complete it by shoveling it out, on yontif. So now this is all basically dependent on this machlokas, about whether machshiri yochel nefesh docher shabbos, yontif or not. The Tanya, since it says, now again, this is really, remember, this is the Mishnah. However, because we're going to add what Rabbi Yehuda said, it's not enough for us to talk about the Mishnah, so we bring the Braita. So we just bring the whole thing from the Braita. So, Ein Bein Yom Tov L'Shabbat, Ela Ochel Nefesh Bilvad, and Rabbi Yehuda is Matir, even Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, and now we want to talk about what the Mokar is in the Torah. So, my time in the Tanakama, why does the Tanakama feel that when the Torah was matir ochel nefesh, it was only the direct need for the ochel nefesh, and not something that would make ochel nefesh mutter. Now, remember how this relates back to turning off the light for purposes of intimacy. So over there, we said that the issue is that it's not direct ochel nefesh. By turning off the light, all you're doing is making possible the ochel nefesh. And that's basically the issue of machshirei ochel nefesh, and that's exactly why we kept saying, well, you could use a sheet. Well, you go to another room. Well, okay, we didn't want to pass it. So this is the question. So here, it says in the Torah, hu levado. So when it talks about ochel nefesh, what does it say? Ach asher yeachel ochel nefesh, hu levado yeaseh lechem. Only that and only that. So what's the point of saying that and only that? So that is telling me it alone and not the makshirim for the ochel nefesh. So that it's telling me who the lo makshirav. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. The pasuk says, I mean, why does that say levado yaseh lachem? It could say, hu levado yaseh. When it says hu levado yaseh lachem, what it's coming to add is any need at all. L'chol tzarchichem. Anything that you will ultimately need in order to get that food ready, is mutter. So on the contrary, the pasuk is going out of its way to be matir imachshir ochel nefesh. And the Tanakama, what does the Tanakama do with that word lachem? Well, we know what they do. We had that discussion before. The Tanakama learns that lachem means velo nenochrim, where we had the other shita about lachem velo leklavim, but in any event, there was another use for that lachem, besides telling me anything for you. It was stressing dafka things that are for you, not things that are for goyim, not things that are for hegdash. Now, we had all those different approaches to it. And what about according to Rabbi Yehuda? What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the fact that it says who? What does it mean who? It and only that, meaning not makshirin. Says Rabbi Yehuda, well, I mean, why don't we think about that for a minute, and then you'll see exactly why I'm right. I mean, on the one hand, the Torah is saying who, which means only actual ochel nefesh, not makshir ochel nefesh, okay? Then it says lachem, which is mashma, anything at all that you are going to need. So how do you explain that? I'll tell you how to explain it, and then everything will make sense. Lo kasha, kan b'makshirin she'efshar la'asotam me'erev yom tov. That's the whole point. If the makshir ochel nefesh could have been done before yom tov, then you can't. Because you should have done it. So there it's coming to tell me, hu levado, only this. But kan b'makshirim she'ev shalasotam. When it says lachem, if this is what you need, then this is what you need. How do I need it? Because I couldn't have done it before yontif. So kan b'makshirim she'ev shalasotam erev yontif. And that, indeed, is mutter. Omer v'yiram ha'shmu. If you had a shapu, let's say you had a spit that didn't break, so it's still usable, but it bent, so it was nirtsaf. Asur l'takno b'yom tov. You can't fix that on yontif because being bent does not prevent you from using it. and therefore it's not necessary to get it all straight. I mean, I understand that you'd like to have it straight, but there's no limitation on your use, and therefore you're not allowed to do that because, like we said, anything that could have been done before, which means anything that was actually usable without doing the repair, is for sure going to be okay. Meaning you can't fix it. Well, obviously. I mean, if I can't even fix it when I can't use it, because I could have fixed it before, how can I fix it when I can use it? Pshita! Well, I'll tell you, what we're talking about over here is that all you need to do to get this thing fixed is just to pull it with your hand, you know? You don't need anything. All you need to do is just straighten it out, pull your hand over it, give it a little yank, and it'll straighten out. So you think, okay, so that's not called a repair, is it? Kamashwan, that is called a repair. And even that, afagav the mission be a day, you can't even do that. The Omer of Yoram Shmuel, Shapud, Shetzalubo Basar, once we're talking about spits, I just want to point out that once you've used the spit for roasting, so then it's pretty disgusting, and you've already finished the roast. So what do you need? What do you need to leave it around for and to move it? Because of that, it becomes muktzeh, and it's usur l'taltalo b'yomtov. Rav Ada bar Ava said that Rav Malkio said that what you could do is you could be shomto, umenicho b'keren zavit. Look, I mean, you could certainly just pull it out, you know, a shomto means with a little bit of a shinui, you know, so you do it not in the normal way, you kick it over into a corner, and then you can leave it there in the corner, but you can't actually pick it up the normal way, and in that, basically, he's agreeing, also taltalo b'yamta. Omer b'chia barashi omer of huna, there's another thing to take into consideration, and that is, does it have any usable meat that's left on it? I think Remalkia was only matir when at least it's got a kizayas buster, so then you can move it in an abnormal way. But if it's literally like disgusting, has nothing on it, so then you're not even allowed to do it shalokid darko. And therefore, it's only hushiyesh lav kizayas basar. Ravina Amar? Ravina says, no. You don't leave a spit. I mean, come on. The spit has a sharp edge in it. Well, you're gonna leave it so that your 2-year-old could stab your 3-year-old? No way. So because of that, afal pi she'ena lav basar mutar l'taltalo b'davi hakotz b'rishus harabi. Are you not allowed to move a thorn in rishus harabi because of the fact that someone could get hurt on it? So you're certainly not allowed to carry in Rishus HaRabim, but you're allowed to move pokas pokas mi'arba amis, which normally you're not allowed to do, to make sure that people will be safe. So security concerns are very important. If I'm allowed to move in Rishus HaRabim, koshikein, the rabbanan are not going to assert with muktzah. Now this, meanwhile, gets us a little confused as to who said it. Because we said that that was, we quoted that in the name of Rav Malkio. Now the problem is, that, all right, Moshe Wilshinsky, we saw that. So we quoted it as Rav Malkio. Now, the problem is that Rav Malkio and Rav Malkia had very close names, and their mail was constantly getting confused. And so were the Piskei Halachos that Rav Malkio said and Rav Malkia said. So we wanted to make a simon as to who really said what. So, Omer of Chirina, Bereder of Ika, look, what we just said about the spit, the shapud, that din, and the din of shvachot, that's the din that even if a woman brings into a marriage 100 shvachot, she still has to do certain basic things because otherwise she gets too spoiled and can end up being mitbatelet. If she's mitbatelet, she'll end up being mizana because it's maybe the din she'imum, and that kills your brain. So, shapod, shafuchot, shvachot, and gumot. Gumot is the halacha that a pubescent, where we can't find any pubic hair, but we do find still follicles, hair follicles, and therefore we have a right to assume that there was hair in those follicles. That's called gumot. And that is enough to establish puberty. So, those three statements, this one that we just had, shapod, shvachot, and gumot, that indeed was said by Rav Malkio, the way that you just quoted it. But the thing about bluris, which is that if a Jew is the barber and the goy is getting a haircut and he wants you to leave the blueries. The blueries was a kind of mohawk cut that they would use for Avodah Zarah. So the Jewish barber is not allowed to do that because he's basically making a sign for Avodah Zarah. So there was a question over there, how far away do you have to stop for the barber? So it said over there that Rav Malkia says that you have to stop three etzpaot away from the blurit. And then the idea of Efer Mikla, that's halacha that you're not allowed to use like activated charcoal, basically, as an antiseptic, even on an open wound. The problem is that activated charcoal turns the wound black, and therefore, if it gets absorbed under the skin, it looks like you did a tattoo. So he answers using charcoal as an antiseptic. And the problem of who moved my cheese, no, that was Shmu, sorry. The problem of why Goyesha cheese is usher, and that was, he was the one who said that that's because they coat it with fat from Chazer. Okay, so that was said actually by Rav Malkia, whereas Rav Papa said, no, you've got it wrong. Because basically anything that was said about a Mishnah or a Braisa, Masnisa, all of those things were said by Malkia. And all of the things that had to do with Stam discussions of the Amoraim, those were all said by Rav Malkia. The ones in the Braisa, the Mishnah, were said by Rav Malkia, and the Shmaitzer was said by Rav Malkio. And therefore, he's arguing, basically, because what it said, what we said about Shvachot, and what we said about the idea of why the cheese is usher from a goy, and how far away you have to stop cutting hair if you're a barber, those are all things that had to do with Mishnayos. Masha Enkein, the thing about the Efer Mikla, that had nothing to do with a Mishnah, and neither did the thing about the spit that we just had, nor was the din about the follicles. So basically, the nafkamina, the simen to remember, Tainas Rav Papa, is that the Mishnah is always the queen, and the queen is a lashon of Malkia. So if you remember, Rav Malkia said anything that had to do with the queen, so then you'll understand. And the difference between these two shitas is the one about Shvachot, because Shvachot, according to Rav Papa, the thing about Shvachot, Rav Chanina claimed that that was said by Rav Malkio, was really made by Rav Malkia, because that was the Mishnah that talked about even if she would bring in, how many Shvachot she brings in. And that was added on that Mishnah. Okay, there's a big shaila every time this comes up about, and did that mean that we had four against two? Or did it mean that we actually had to switch one of the others? And that was a shaila of whether he was trying to actually say that the Mishnah was always said by Rav Malkia, and sometimes the other ones were said by Rav Malkia, and sometimes not. Or whether he really meant that we have to flip one of the other three, which is the Efer Mikla as well, and put it in the name of Rav Malkio. Okay, but this is like every time we have the sugya, every time their name comes up, we go through the same thing, so we've done this many times. And now it's time for our Kapitan, who managed to get away with murder in the previous introduction to the Mishnah, but now has made the mistake of putting himself back online. So now he's online, assuming he's listening. Ah!
Sorry, Rabbi, it was delayed. I had to take my family to the parking lot and see home. I tried to listen, but it was...
I saw a brave attempt.
Aye.
All right,
so,
anyway. Lovely. So now, wait a second. How much did we want to do? That's the question. What's that? The question is whether I don't hear it. Whether I mean the question is whether we should go to the mit. You know what? It's enough. It's a mitzvah yantav. I think we've done enough. We heard Richie's voice. That's enough to give us a beautiful evening. And I think we should do this already tomorrow together with the next stuff. It's like smack bang in the middle, you know. So Bezrat Hashem, we'll see you tomorrow also, same time, same station, where we'll get all our chaverim from Joburg, Yimir Tzashem, to join us. So the less we do, the better off they are. So we'll see you then tomorrow. Okay, everyone, have a wonderful Yisru Chag. And let's hope we could take the incredible Inyanim of Sukkos with us to Mimalava throughout the year. It's really scary leaving that Sukkah behind. Kitz Bedeni Bisukko B'yom Ra'ah. It's like awful. It's so hard. But okay, we had the Inyanim of being Malava. And that Sukkah itself is a Livway. It's connected to Livyasan. So Bezrat Hashem, we should have the best possible Livway to be with us as we go ahead.